If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
All right, second half of the program begins right now. We are live at Hen House, my home hen house, one of my two home hen houses, here at 119th and Row, northeast corner of 119th and Row, where you can get all the flowers you could ever want. It's Valentine's Day, guys. You got to get the flowers if you want to be a hero, right? If you want a little romance. They got every color of flower you could possibly ever want. The florists have beautiful arrangements, whether it's roses or some of the other flowers that are here, but just such a great selection of roses. Orange, red, hot pink, light pink. There's some that are kind of like two-tone colors, just like this brilliant white color, yellow, red, every kind of rose you could possibly want, every kind of bouquet you could want. They've got it. The florists just keep bringing out more and more flowers, so come take advantage of it. Make sure you make your Valentine happy. They've got balloons to go with it. They've got stuffed animals. They've got all kinds of stuff, plus all kinds of great sweet treats as well for your Valentine. Come check it out now at your neighborhood hen house. All the locations will be happy to take care of you. Express checkout for the flowers as well. Go to henhouse.com. Find the location nearest you. Let's get the drill started. Going to Cleveland, right? If I'm not mistaken, that's where we're starting first. Andy Baskins, 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland, Ohio, is up first. Andy, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm still looking for Travis Kelce. I think he's on a bender. We went to the same high school. He's a lot younger than I am, but I've been texting him every day, so I'm putting out an APB. If anyone sees Travis there, tell him to call Baskin. We're trying to get him on the show.
All right, very good. We'll see what we can do. I don't listen. I traveled all the way to the American Century Championships in Lake Tahoe and couldn't get him to go 12 feet to sit down with me that day. So if he doesn't want to be found, he's not going to be found. But he's certainly one of our favorites here in Kansas City. What about Myles Garrett? Reinstated by the NFL. Bygones be bygones, and Browns fans are happy and satisfied with how that was handled, or no?
Yeah, no, I think Browns fans are happy. I think there's a little sigh of relief because I, for one, thought he could have sat out for an entire season, at least 16 games, for what happened. But I guess, you know, he did all the right things. He went in and talked to the league office this week. The commissioner really didn't have to meet with him this week. He met with him. They ironed things out, and so now he's back. Browns fans are happy. I'm just wondering how the rest of the story is going to play out with him talking to ESPN and, again, saying that he was called the N-word during the play. So we'll see how that plays out.
All right, and how's their off-season play out from here? They get him back in the mix. What kind of moves do you anticipate from them?
They need to get an offensive lineman. They need a left tackle, without a doubt. Now that they've gone back to Andrew Berry and, Dorsey's out here, so I think they're going to go back to an analytic approach. They've got the number 10 pick in the draft. If they don't draft an offensive lineman, I would look for them to trade back and draft two offensive linemen with whatever they could get.
Is Kareem Hunt going to be back with the Cleveland Browns after his next, fun little altercation he had with the police?
Yeah, that was it. I don't know right now. It's all been very quiet. The first day everything happened, a lot of noise, a lot of smoke. Jimmy Haslam and Andrew Berry, the new general manager, talked last week. They both kind of said, you know what, we expect more from him. We expect him to be better than what's going on right now. I think he is walking on very, very, very thin ice, and if there's anything else that happens, he'll be gone.
All right, let's talk about the Cleveland Indians. Everyone had Francisco Lindor being traded. He has not been traded to this point. Do you expect him to start the season, or do we now look at the trade deadline as when he goes, or could he still go here in spring training?
I think he – well, you know what? I would have said trade deadline and maybe next season, but now that Mike Clevinger's hurt and we don't know how long, and Terry Francona talked about that today out at spring training, saying we got to wait for the doctors to let us know what's going on with him because he had surgery today. If he's gone, that might change things, because when you lose your number one starter, and if you go back 1 year, you've lost three of your top starters with Corey Kluber being gone and Trevor Bauer. So I don't know if that's going to push the timeline up on the Indians, but Lindor will be gone. It's just a matter of time, and Indians fans are just kind of sitting back to see what the Tribe can get for him.
All right. And you mentioned, I know you're not a doctor, it's supposedly a meniscus tear with Clevinger. Where is the starting pitching depth? Kluber gone. You've just gone through it. You know, is that what's been just a tremendous strength for them now starting to look like maybe a weakness, or do they have more young names that we're just not aware of that are ready to step in?
Yeah, there were some names that popped up at the end of last season because they went through so many injuries. And Shane Bieber's a guy that's probably going to have to step up in the rotation. Some people had him slated as a number two starter. Carlos Carrasco could be a number one. As most people know, he was battling cancer. So he's back in the rotation as of now. He says he's healthy. He says he feels good. So Carrasco and Bieber are going to have to move up in the rotation. Then you got Zach Plesac as well. And Aaron Civale is another guy that really stood out last year. Adam Plutko is another name. So if you're doing rotisserie baseball, fantasy baseball, those might be some guys that are going to get a lot of starts for the Indians, depending on how long Clevinger's out, and it could be a while.
All right, lastly, let's go down the road to Columbus, Ohio. The Buckeyes dismissing two players amidst rape allegations. What's the big picture on this? I mean, they took action, but, you know, is this a sign that there's a loose ship going on there, that there's more problems than this? What's the reaction to the Buckeyes letting two kids go?
You know, it's interesting. In Cleveland, that story hasn't really played too huge. I'm sure in Columbus it's playing like crazy. But, I mean, it's like anywhere. You work somewhere with more than 100 people, and you're bound to have bad eggs. So I don't know what's going to happen in that situation. I know that, you know, the Buckeyes are like, they're gone. So we'll see what happens and how the legal process plays out. But it's never good for Ohio State when those stories are floating around, or any other major university in the country.
Yeah, no doubt. Andy Baskins in Cleveland, great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
No problem. Congratulations to you guys, too, as well.
Well, that was pretty damn cool. I'll tell you what, right now, a little congrats out of Cleveland. Thank you very much. Pete Fox, NBC Sports Radio in Los Angeles, California. Pete, you got anything you want to say to us Kansas City fans?
Hey, nice win, man. I'm glad you guys took care of business and covered the spread. Way to go. Hey, we're all winners when they cover the spread, right?
There you go, brother. There you go. Absolutely. Win and cover. That's what we want. And that's what the Chiefs delivered. They made it fun, too. It was entertaining. Get down and then not only win, but cover all three playoff games. Thank you. Thank you for that completely unsolicited kudos you just gave us right there. I appreciate it. All right, let's talk a little bit about L.A. Football. Let's talk about the Chargers and Tyrod Taylor. They're saying they're willing to go into the season with him as the quarterback. But is that just a smokescreen? I mean, we hear they're one of the lowest odds to get Tom Brady. Do they have other plans besides Tyrod Taylor?
Well, if they do, we haven't heard a whole lot about it, right? So, you know, I've been saying for years, many people have been saying for years, that they're going to have to draft somebody at some point, right? So I think this is the year, finally, once and for all. So it all depends on who they get. You know, the thing about Tyrod Taylor that many people like, especially the Chargers, is he's fairly steady. You know, he's not going to make a ton of mistakes. He's not going to turn the ball over. He's not going to be extremely out of control. You know, he's a stalwart, if you will. He's not a superstar, but he's a guy that gets the job done and doesn't make a ton of mistakes. And, you know, he also can provide leadership to a younger quarterback. So from that perspective, he fits in nicely. And, you know, the team as a whole has always thought that when all else fails, he'll be good enough until we figure out who our franchise quarterback is going to be for the future.
Is there a name that's out there that everybody likes, that everybody thinks is the guy?
No, the name, even though, as you put it, the odds are fairly low on Tom Brady coming to L.A., that's the name that keeps coming back around, that everyone's hoping for, speculating on. That's really the only name as far as the next Charger quarterback.
Okay. All right. We'll see. We'll see if they fall in love with somebody in the draft. What's the word with the Rams? I mean, you know, disappointing year. A lot of times you'll see a young team that has great success in 1 year take a step back to take a couple of steps forward. This one, they're so short on draft picks. What's the feeling about the expectations on the Rams? I mean, people have cooled a little bit nationally. What about in L.A.? Do they still think the arrow's pointing up?
Yeah, it's interesting. The feeling is that, you know, they kind of cleaned house with regard to coaches and so forth. So they've kind of rebuilt things there underneath McVay. So that's one of the things they did to try to kind of correct and get back on track. But there's a lot of talk still around here about what do you do with Gurley? You know, are we going to trade him? Are we going to try to trade him? What is the deal? Because there's still not a lot of confidence in his health. So that's kind of a big topic of discussion as to where and what happens with Todd Gurley moving forward. And then, you know, with regard to just the team as a whole, I think a lot of people are still, they have positive feelings about this team. It didn't feel like it came unraveling. I mean, they had a decent season last year. But the fact is that, yeah, there's still kind of that positivity from the fans that, hey, you know, it was an off year, a tough division, you know, two other playoff teams within the division. So from that perspective, hey, it's not too long of a journey to kind of get back on track and get back into the playoffs and make a run at a Super Bowl at some point.
Little baseball, Shohei Ohtani expected to be back up on the mound in May. You know, are they still committed to the idea of him playing both ways?
Yeah, it really feels like, you know, they're sticking by their word with regard to what they told him. And the main reason that they were able to sign him is that they were going to support that effort to be a two-way player. So, you know, I guess you have to give him a little credit for standing by that and sticking to it. You know, Joe Maddon of any manager is going to be a guy that's more than willing and accepting of doing things a little differently. So I think from that perspective, he fits well with the Shohei Ohtani idea of being a two-way player. And Joe Maddon is up for anything just about when it comes to winning baseball games, you know. So he's not one of these stringent, old-school, crotchety, you know, we do things the old-fashioned way. I mean, he's an older guy, but he's definitely progressive when it comes to his thoughts on how you win baseball games.
Not crotchety. That's always always good to hear when someone's not crotchety. I like that. Clippers are the 3 seed in the West right now, just 5 games behind the Lakers, 1 game behind the Nuggets. Wow, kind of nursing Paul George and Kawhi Leonard along, some load management going on with Kawhi Leonard. Is this how they wanted it to go? Is this how they expected it to go? Or are they having to maybe, you know, be a little more careful with these two guys than they originally thought?
Yeah, no, I think this is kind of how they expected it to go. I mean, the downside for them as a team is Kawhi and Paul George really they played like 500 minutes together thus far this season, so they haven't really gelled, you know, as a group or a two-way team, if you will, those two guys playing together on the floor at the same time. You know, fortunately, the Clipper bench is very deep, so they haven't really needed that all that much at this point, and it really has felt all season like this team is playing for the postseason. It doesn't matter how good they are in the regular season. As long as they get to the postseason and make a run, everyone, as far as Clipper fans, will be happy. So you just have to wonder what's the chemistry between Kawhi and Paul George when it gets down to important playoff games, crunch time, that are really going to matter because these guys have not played together a lot. And you could say the same thing for the Lakers with regard to LeBron and AD. They haven't played a lot together, but they are playing together now during the regular season, unlike PG and Kawhi. They're just not playing that much for a variety of reasons, whether it's load management, whether it's injuries, whatever it may be. It doesn't feel like they have that intention on being the one seed. They just want to stay healthy, get to the postseason, and then make a run.
Pete Fox in L.A., you're the man. Appreciate it, buddy. Have yourself a great weekend.
You too, man. Thanks.
And we go to South Dakota and Oregon and Washington and Michigan.
And Jim Costa, ESPN 96.1 and The Fan, 1130 WDFN in Detroit, Michigan, is next. Jim, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Yeah, is Mel Tucker doing great? Explain to me how this comes about. I understand that the Big Ten is swimming in money with the Big Ten Network and Michigan State. Certainly I can appreciate any school that says, hey, we're serious about football and we're going to throw the check behind it. Did they really need to go this big to get Mel Tucker after a 5-7 season out of Colorado?
Yeah, you know what? The college football, you know this. It's the haves and the have-nots. Do you want to be the hammer or do you want to be the nail? Michigan State decided they want to go be the hammer, and they spent a lot of money, and people have been talking, is it desperate what they did? And I would say, yeah, it probably was desperate, but also necessary. Like, Valentine's Day comes around, you forgot to get your girl something. It's desperate to go buy the flowers and chocolates last minute and pay a fortune, but it's also necessary. Michigan State was in dire straits after the sudden retirement of Mark D'Antonio, and they had to pay to get a quality coach.
They have questions. They have problems going on around this program. How quick should anybody expect Tucker? You know, last year I know was a very disappointing season, but there are some hurdles he's got to clear. How quickly do you expect him to have Michigan State back up there contending for a league title?
Yeah, and that's the expectation, right, is to win Big Ten championships. That's what that salary would indicate. They have a long way to go. The quarterback situation's in flux. The offensive line, I mean, that takes a couple years to build back up. It's been in shambles now for the last 4 years. They do not return a quality receiver. They lose half of their defense. Listen, Tucker's a great recruiter. He's got the Cleveland roots, but it starts with his first class, which he didn't even get to sign yet. This is kind of a year zero. I'd say at least 3 years before they're in Big Ten title contention.
Yeah, I can believe that. All right, tell me, let's stay with Michigan State. Let's talk about Tom Izzo. Spartans fall out of the top 25. They did get a gutty win against Illinois the other night, but Izzo chastising the fans. Listen, when you achieve the way Izzo has, you know, we've seen Roy Williams chastise his fan base. Coach K obviously just went off on camera the other day, a couple of weeks ago, against his fan base. I'm not acting like, you know, Tom Izzo's going to crumble because he went after the fans, but fans still don't like it. What is the relationship like, Izzo and the fans?
Well, on one hand, he's beloved. He spoke before the press conference for Tucker yesterday, and I mean, he's a rock star on campus. He has the national championship in the year 2000. They're actually honoring that team on Saturday when Maryland comes to town. But it is one of those, wait, it's been since 2000 since he won a national title. This is a Hall of Fame coach. You'd like to see him seal the deal, and that was the expectation season number one. They've had some injuries to Langford, and then Hauser was never ruled eligible, and it's taken a little bit before they've really got going here. You mentioned they fall out of the top 25, but I do think that Illinois game was noteworthy. That was a road game against the top 25 program, and they were up 20 points in that game. Couple seniors in foul trouble, upperclassmen in foul trouble down the stretch, gutted it out when it got tense and it got tight. That's a moment where the season could have been, an avalanche could have continued. They instead stopped the bleeding with a big road win and now have a chance to build some momentum against Maryland at home on Saturday.
Do you think they get things rolling and move up in the seedings, or is this just going to be one of those 8-seed Spartan teams? Listen, no one wants to see Michigan State in the tournament. We get that. But is this a team that you think can get rolling and get back up into the, at least into, you know, maybe a 3, a 4, something like that?
You know, it's interesting. Sometimes the Tom Izzo teams that aren't the 1 or the 2 seed end up making a run in March in your bracket. So, I would not rule them out, especially not with the punch they've been getting from freshman Rocket Watts. His last 4 conference road games, 14 points a game. He had 21 points in that road game against Illinois. If you're looking for an added oomph, that classic Izzo figures it out in March, it would be the growth of Rocket Watts that puts him over the top and wins a couple tournament games.
All right, tell me, Matt Stafford has put up a lot of numbers in his career and had been fairly healthy. Have been very healthy, as a matter of fact, for a number after a slow start with injuries. Had been very healthy. Gets hurt last year, but has not been able to get over the hump when it comes to winning. Now there's some rumors out there that he may be traded. Do you buy this? Do they want to trade him? Or is somebody calling about Stafford? Where would the interest be?
Yeah, this report came out, local Detroit TV station, yesterday, and people get excited because they haven't won under Matthew Stafford, and change is always exciting. The report was quickly shot down by Bob Quinn, the team's general manager. He said 100% false, double exclamation point, put it in the big paper here in Detroit. Detroit Free Press had it, and it didn't stop people from talking. As you can imagine, could they move on from Matthew Stafford? Here's the deal. The back injury causes people to question how much longer can he perform at a high level. But he was playing at a high level before the injury. Through 8 games, more touchdown passes than Pat Mahomes or Lamar Jackson. He was really excelling, maybe one of his best seasons of his career prior to the injury. And there are so many factors that make a Matthew Stafford trade unlikely, the first of which, ownership has a mandate to win now. Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn, the team's head coach and general manager, their jobs are on the line. Not typically the type of situation where you throw the franchise into upheaval and go with a new quarterback. There's also the fact that they restructured Stafford's contract in December, which would increase the cap penalty should they trade or move on from him. In fact, they would be lighting $11 million on fire in extra penalties to trade Matthew Stafford. I don't think it's going to happen, but that doesn't stop people from talking.
Yeah, it's a big number to not have postseason success. That's the problem. It's like, would you be better just taking a quarterback to manage the game for $5 or $6 million if you can find him? And again, if not him, then who? Who is that guy? As opposed to giving a monster number to a Matt Stafford. To me, that's the purgatory that teams put themselves in, is the fear of the unknown quarterback drives them to give near top of the food chain money to quarterbacks that perform middle of the pack. I mean, it's, and then the question, and the Lions would seemingly be the poster child for that, right?
Well, yeah, so that's you're right in the heart of the conversation that we have on a seemingly daily basis here in Michigan, and he's probably the most polarizing figure, Matthew Stafford. And what I would tell you, as someone who's been subjected to Lions football my entire life, it has not been a treat, and a lot of fans the same way, we've seen this team fail to run the ball since Barry Sanders retired, failed to put a competent top-level defense on the field year in and year out. Lions fans can run through a litany of coaching blunders and draft blunders, and the reality is the roster is just not very good around Matthew Stafford. Even when he plays at a high level, they have a losing record. And the thought would be, you've got a top three pick, you've got some extra money to spend in free agency this offseason. If you could put a competent team around Stafford, maybe you wouldn't waste him the way you wasted Barry Sanders or Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, I trust me. Got a buddy who's a Lions fan. Like to see him win. It's been a long, long time. There's no doubt. Jim Costa in Detroit. Great stuff, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great weekend.
Hey, anytime. You too.
And Chad Dukes. Chad Dukes versus the world on 106.7. The Fan in Washington, D.C. is next. Chad, how are you, sir?
It's a pleasure to be on the show, my friend. Thank you for having me.
Yes, it's always our pleasure. And let's start with the Redskins. Josh Norman released. Is this the first of many? Is this a complete rebuild? What's the offseason going to look like for the Skins?
Yeah, Garrett Fellows reporting that Paul Richardson, the wide receiver they signed a couple years back from Seattle, is also being released by the team. Basically, what we have here, Sarn, is we've got some people that are willing to do the work that needed to be done years ago by an administration that wasn't willing to do it, wasn't willing to trade Trent Williams, wasn't able to talk about maybe moving on from Ryan Kerrigan, wasn't able to release Josh Norman and realize that the Paul Richardson signing was a disaster. And, you know, there's some cap implications as well, but, you know, Ron Rivera is coming in here and he is not beholden to anybody thus far. And it doesn't matter if he calls Dan Snyder Dan or Mr. Snyder. He has already not endorsed Dwayne Haskins. He said there's going to be a quarterback competition here. And these are all the things he should be empowered to say. And if you're a Redskins fan, you got to feel good. I don't know if they're going to be good, but I know that the path to success is autonomy. And the path to success is Dan Snyder not being able to say, hey, I like that guy or my kid went to school with him. He needs to start. And these are all indicators that that's not what's taking place here in D.C.
Is Trent Williams next? Will he be moved?
I don't know. They're saying the right things, like they want to bring him in and they want to talk to him. The Quentin Dunbar thing was real. They want to Quentin Dunbar demand a trade and then walk it back the very next day. They're releasing Josh Norman, so I assume that means that's better off. I would have moved on from Trent Williams before the trade deadline last year. I have no disrespect to the guy. He's one of the greatest Redskins past 15 years, for whatever that means. But he's, you know, in his 30s. He, you know, is off injured, can't stay on the field. He wants to get paid like one of the top tackles in the game. I don't agree with the way Trent Williams has handled the situation. He's been through a lot. He didn't like the training staff. I'm sure it was very scary. But if it were up to me, if there's a third-round pick out there, it's going to be less than whatever you would have gotten last year. But I would try to regain some assets and move on and try to build the offensive lines of the draft.
All right, last year the Nats watched Bryce Harper walk away. All they did was bust through and win their first World Series. Anthony Rendon walking away now. What are the expectations this year?
Well, it's interesting. Rendon was not as salacious a character as Harper, and Harper was polarizing, and young kids loved him, but the way this was sold was that we're letting Harper walk and we'll be able to keep Rendon, and they're damn lucky they won the World Series, because if not, I think there would be pandemonium amongst Nationals fans, because Rendon's a stud. I mean, you see that guy. If he talked a little bit more into a microphone, he'd already be, you know, an MVP in this league. They're tossing the keys to Carter Kieboom, who flashed for a game or two, but really looked like he was overmatched last season at third base. It's probably the biggest question mark heading into the season. But if you imagine this, dude, like, they're in the same building as the Astros. They're the World Series champions that let Harper and Rendon walk back-to-back years, and no one's saying one word about them because of who they share a building with down there. It is unbelievable how much they're flying under the radar.
Yeah, no doubt. There is no mention. It's all Astros all the time. All right, yeah. Let's talk college basketball. Maryland, the Terps, how good are they?
Well, the problem is it, like, if Maryland is thought of to be a team around these parts that can make it to the second round of the NCAAs, everyone loses their minds. I don't know. I've spoken to some alum. J.P. Finley works at NC Sports Washington. He went to Maryland. He gets swept up in the fervor. Everybody says, this is a team that can go on a run. They're organized. They're well coached. They seem to be competitive in big spots and in big games.
you know, your guess is as good as mine. It's always fun around this area when we have a team. Like, we have the George Masons, you know, the VCUs, and it's just different when it's Maryland because of the championship and because there's just so many alum in the area. I would assume if I, you know, you're making me make a pick right here, that they'll get into the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. I think we'll all be that as a success.
And where is the love affair, if any, with Mark Turgeon? I understand that Maryland thinks in terms of winning national championships, but now they've won one. And Mark Turgeon has again has this team, you know, going bouncing back and forth between the second 10 and the top 10 in college basketball. And it looks like Texas could be open. His springboard to Maryland was Texas A&M. And we have a term we like to call, I don't think we coined it or anything, but just restart the shot clock. If they don't love you in Maryland, why not take the same money or maybe more and go to a new fan base that might appreciate you more because they haven't raised their expectations the way Maryland has. Is there any talk about Turgeon and whether or not his eyes could wander if there's a job like Texas or something else open?
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny that you're bringing that up, you know, kind of outside of the bubble of the area, but it's a conversation that's often had. It's like this, he flies under the radar. It's just, he's got an over-the-top bombastic personality, and I don't know if the term is take for granted because they have lofty expectations every year at Maryland. It's kind of, you know, I feel like it's Virginia Tech football is very close to Maryland basketball. Is it, you know, generally they're pretty good, but they don't have the same perspective of themselves that everybody else does. If I was one of those programs, I'd talk to Turgeon. Absolutely. I mean, this is a guy that's going to be able to, with better recruits and better athletes, probably going to be able to get a program like that to a championship level. And I don't know what his motivations are. I don't know if he's motivated by fame or respect or any of that. It's interesting to kind of throw that out there without the personality traits and trappings to be a part of it. But, yeah, I mean, just judging by the way people speak about him in the area and the amount of coverage the team gets, if I were him, I probably would find some allure in a larger program where I would be, you know, for the lack of a better term, the new hot chick that just came into the class.
I love it. Chad Dukes in D.C., buddy. Great stuff, man. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great weekend.
Love you, son. Thanks for having me on, buddy.
Feel good.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Jazz into the hour answer. In the last 80 years, two players have had 2,000 hits in a single decade. Ichiro is one. He did it in the aughts despite not playing in 2000. He still had 2,030 hits from 2000 to 09. Who's the other? 2,000 hits in a single decade.
2,000 hits in a single decade?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It happened twice in the 1920s.
Let's see.
But only two guys have done it since.
Since the 1920s.
Since the 1920s.
So Pete Rose, well, then I was going to say that Ty Cobb and Pete Rose would be a couple of guys to go after, but Ty Cobb's obviously not it. So Pete Rose wouldn't be a bad idea. But he was just kind of more steady Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Gwynn?
Nope. Think about the theme of the day.
Oh, Valentine's Day. Valentine. Go with the last name Valentine. Flower. Rose. Pete Rose.
Pete Rose.
Oh, duh. Oh, moron. I talked myself right off the obvious.
Pete Rose had 2,045 hits in the 1970s.
What an idiot. Curtis is like, looks like a turtle poking his head out of his shell. He had his head so far forward, staring right at the roses in front of us.
In fact, you had it when you landed. I thought, well, he's got it now.
Got it, yeah.
Was it Dave Tulip? Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't get it.
And I decided Darnell Valentine is not going to be one of my answers. I did have a question ready for that one, though. Who's the last first-round draft pick to play for Ted Owens? And you threw Darnell Valentine out, and I was like, crap.
Is it Malik Chocolate? Is it, you know, something? Yep. Pete Rose. Well, I'm a moron. Great Cajun food from Jazz. Great spot to go with your sweetheart if you'd like. Great live music. If you love music, there's always live music at all three Jazz locations. And, of course, great, great Cajun food at Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen, out by the racetrack, of course, in Independence, by Silverstein Ice Center's Arena. If you're going out to the Mavericks game, do we have any Mavericks tickets, or are they all gone?
We still have a few Mavericks tickets. If you're going out to the game, they're for Saturday's game, though, right? For Saturday's game. But if you're going out tonight or tomorrow, really, go by Jazz. Great Cajun food there. And, of course, the original by the KU Med Center. Great Cajun food from Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen. College basketball this weekend. Kansas, you know, everybody's on Baylor. We did the Frank opinions, right? And there was 64% said Baylor would win it. Wasn't that what the number was?
Let me see. I can't.
Well,
I can't.
Don't try to scroll back. That'd take you half an hour. Like, they're one game back. 1 year out of 15, they haven't won it. And, like, everybody's forgotten what this team did.
Yeah.
I mean, time and time again.
Oklahoma, I was looking back. I was talking to somebody over the week I guess this is the last time someone started 11-0 that wasn't Kansas, and it was Texas. But prior to that, it was Oklahoma in 09, the Blake Griffin team. And then the Sooners, now he got hurt, but they lost three of their last four, and Kansas down a game, actually won by a game in 2009 at 14-2. With a team that lost everyone from the championship year. So a game back, even though it's a game back with a head-to-head loss at home, this team just routinely has done this over the years. It's like the people turn that corner, the fourth turn at the Belmont, and they see how horses see how far away the finish line is. They go, oh, my gosh, and guys, horses collapse. The Big 12 season is kind of like that. You get to that 12-game mark, you think, God, that's so far down there, and Kansas is ready for it, and they seem to. So I think Baylor still has the upper hand. Bill Self thinks they're way, as he said, they're way ahead of us. But
whatever.
But I think that's just him being Bill Self, him being the deferential coach that he generally has been to other great teams. But I would not shock me if they beat Baylor in Waco, and if they do, Steven the rest of the way.
I think they'll beat Baylor. Each of them have played two of their last three on the road against bottom half. Let me make sure. Yeah, bottom half opponents, all right? Baylor in their last three, okay, three-game snapshot, the Baylor Bears have beaten Texas, have won at Texas by 7, at home against Oklahoma State by 8, and at K-State by 6. Okay, that's 21 points. They're winning by an average of 7 over bottom half opponents. KU, likewise, playing bottom half opponents, has beaten two of their three. What am I talking about? West Virginia's not a bottom half. They beat West Virginia by 9, TCU by 14, and Texas by 11. They're winning by more than 11 points a game.
And defensively, they have been amazing.
Why is Baylor ahead? I don't care what Coach Self said. He's saying whatever he needs to motivate his team through the media there. But why would 64% or whatever that was be picking Baylor as just like they're definitely going to win? You want to tell me?
It's the where the head-to-head win came, and I think there's a lot of people that don't feel this is the prototypical Kansas team. Although I think this is a year there really isn't. I don't think they have to be the prototypical Kansas team. That there is no great team in any conference this year. So I think they're right up there. You probably get a little bit of MU and K-State hate on that one added to it.
You know, they're not exactly Baylor a crew of gunners themselves.
No.
You know, they've got what?
For a team that's won 20 games in a row, there's a lot of single-digit wins in there, and single digits.
They've only got two guys that have shot over 100 threes. Mm-hmm. They've got four that have shot 75 or more. What we look up, Notre Dame, I think, has got the most three-point attempts of any Power 5 school. And what do they have, six over 100? Or is it six over 75? Well, how much? What was it, Jed?
It was six over 75, and I think they had five over 100.
Yeah, four or five over 100. They're not that great.
Still six that are three a game.
But my point is, so like Baylor is again kind of just an experienced Kansas team. Who are the pros on Baylor? They're not really there. I mean, I give you know for years, anyone who's listened to this program knows that we've long been a defender of Drew. When we put out our coach rankings, We always have him, all three of us always have him towards the top, and everyone freaks out and goes, oh, God, Drew sucks. Now, it used to be, look at all that talent. Well, now he doesn't have all that talent, but yet here he is again. I got nothing but respect for the basketball program that Drew has built at Baylor. But that being said, I also think that their head is hitting on their ceiling. And I do think that there are three players for Kansas that can be NBA guys. Now, I think everybody needs to cool their jets a little bit on Dotson. Like, a very good player. Oh, he's so fast. That's wonderful. Yeah.
Watch the NBA some.
Yeah.
Some night.
Yeah, and
they're all fast.
Yeah. So is Usain Bolt.
Yeah.
He's not playing in the league.
Right.
Like, you got to be able to control that speed. You know, he doesn't finish at the rim, and everyone gets upset. Kansas fans.
For a guy who blows by guys as often as he does, yeah.
Now, there are some Kansas fans that get upset if you're not just saying every Kansas player is the best that's ever played this position.
I've never encountered that.
You haven't?
On Twitter. No.
Okay.
Not once.
Well, I guess it's just me, but.
Yeah, it could be.
Dotson's a wonderful player. I wish he were the starting point guard at Syracuse. Yes. Granted. Yes, I would absolutely trade my whole roster for the Kansas roster. Whatever I need to do to validate that, I think they're really good. This is a really good Kansas team. In this year, I don't know how good it is in other years, but. I really am. This is, for me, one of the most intriguing NCAA tournaments that's looming out there, because I don't know how to get my arms around what it's going to be, because I don't know who does shoot well. Moving the line back has made everybody worse. I think Kansas is going to beat Baylor head-to-head, and then it's a question, can Baylor keep from dropping one they shouldn't drop? Mm-hmm. Kansas traditionally does avoid the upset. Baylor is in uncharted territory.
And Kansas is really coming together. Bill Self, after the game Wednesday night, said at the end, there's no negative come out of this game. You know, that it isn't often you hear him be that effusive in the praise. And part of it is just the way his team's defense is playing. Before this week, the last time Kansas played back-to-back road games, allowing fewer than 50 points in each one, January of 1959. The year after Wilt left, that was the last time they played back-to-back road games and allowed fewer than 50 points in both games. The last time they allowed back-to-back or fewer than 50 points in any two road games was 81. And, I mean, TCU isn't a great team, but West Virginia, and they had that game. They were playing, and all of a sudden Kansas just shut off the faucet. Marcus Garrett was amazing in the half-court defense. They've got that end nailed down at this point, and they're only going to get better. And if you can't score 70 points against them, or 60 points, you're going to have a hard time beating them.
They're number one in KenPom now. They're number one in defense at KenPom. Number 14 in offense, which is kind of shocking, but because they don't shoot it very well. But that speaks to, you know, how well they're playing. You know, their tempo is pretty low, 234.
Yeah.
So they're kind of, but this is, look, if there's a year you're going to grind your way, as Bill Self says, to a championship, it might be this year when it's a down year in college basketball, and the line's been moved back, taking away some of the ability of the shooting that's out there. This might be the year to play this style.
Yeah. Now, if this team had run up against last year's Auburn team with all those shooters, yeah, they're probably still in trouble. But I don't see that team.
Most people will tell you, most people, Gary Parrish said, offense is what wins in the tournament. But they're 14th in offense. I know it's not the offense that it has become the glamour. Or no, not, the glamour's not fair. The kind of offense that we've seen national champions have.
Right.
It's bombing away threes. I think they're going to need to shoot better than they have, but it's a six-game isolated run, and they'll really be theoretically up against it in four games.
Yeah.
You know, the second game very well could be a team that, you know, we're talking about, what, Illinois? I mean, could they lose to an Illinois? Yes, but, like, you talk about an eight seed, or I'm giving credit, like, an 8-9. You're talking about teams that rank 32 to 36.
Mm-hmm.
So theoretically, they should only be tested in four games. if they do their game well twice and then have somebody get hot in two others, they're national champions.
And you know they're going to be as coached as well as any team in the country.
And you can't – I don't think we've talked enough about the chip on the shoulder of all that they've been through.
Yeah.
Does that weigh them down, bog them down, or does that motivate them and act as just that, the chip on the shoulder that has them going out and playing?
I would tend to lean toward the latter.
Yeah, I would too. We'll take a break. We're at Hen House. All the roses you could ever want, plus an express lane. Their florist doing a fantastic job, whether it's roses, whether it's any other flower you want. They got beautiful, beautiful bouquets. And a lot of people coming by and taking advantage of it. They just keep bringing out more and more and more. Balloons, stuffed animals to go with it. They got some great sweet treats as well. It's all at your neighborhood Hen House. We're at 119th and Row, the northeast corner of 119th and Row. You can find the location nearest you at henhouse.com.
The program with Soren Petro.
He's a big hoss, about a 260-pounder.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, wrapping up hour number 3 in the program. Hen House is where we're at, 119th and Row. Stop on by, stock up on all the roses, flowers you could want, balloons, stuffed animals, everything you need to let your Valentine know that they are special. Express checkout lane as well. It's here at Hen House. The Hall of Fame inductees have been announced. It is, or at least the finalists have been announced. Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, and Kevin Garnett headlining the class of 2020, also WNBA All-Star Tamika Catchings, Baylor's coach, women's coach Kim Mulkey, five-time Division II Coach of the Year Barbara Stevens, and four-time NCAA Coach of the Year Eddie Sutton, along with former Rockets head coach Rudy Tomjanovich, who won two NBA titles. But Kobe Bryant, I think, is getting in.
Tim
Duncan,
names.
Kevin Garnett, all three of those will be in. Pretty good lineup. There as the NBA Hall of Fame candidates, I guess I would say, have been announced. We'll take a break. We'll talk to Harlan next.
Our question brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in Olathe, Leawood, and the original in the gas station at 47th and Mission.
All right, who was the first Montreal Expo to win a Gold Glove? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.